Right now, I would like to welcome to South Florida Arts Beat Carol DeGere and Eric Brown. How are you guys?
Fine,
happy
thanks.
To be here. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks for joining us. We want to get right into a little bit of background. Carol, we'll start with you as far as this great book that you have put together. How did you get the idea to do a book on Stephen Schwartz and his creative process?
Well, I was a freelance writer and looking for a big project, and I certainly found it with this. I was interested in the creative process and hoping to find someone who was articulate about it. And I discovered Stephen Schwartz's website while I was living in Iowa, and he's on the East Coast. But I discovered StephenSchwartz.com, where he sometimes answers questions from fans, and he had some really interesting comments, I thought, about how he wrote some of his songs. For example, Colors of the Wind from Pocahontas. He has a fascinating story about the Blue Corn Moon lyric that he uses, and I just thought that was so fascinating. And his email address was right there, so I thought, okay. And there were no books about him, so I emailed him to see if he would allow me to write a book, and I was the first one to claim dibs on him as a topic and his work as a topic. So
you would think there'd be a lot of people that were clamoring to do a book on Stephen Schwartz, especially, you know, with, of course, the big hit Wicked. But this was a little bit before Wicked, I believe, that you got this idea?
Yes, this was in 2000, so they were just in the midst of working on Wicked.
Mm-hmm. And so the internet, would you have ever thought that he was answering his own email?
I was surprised. He does have an assistant, but I was able to get through, so that was helpful.
And so it was sort of that simple in a way that you just went online, contacted him via the website, got a response. And then how did Mr. Eric Brown here, how did you get involved in this project?
Very much like Carol did. It was through Stephen Schwartz's website. I had gotten the original cast recording of Wicked when it first came out, and I was wondering, well, what he had been doing since the last I'd heard of him, and I came across his website, and I, too, was very impressed with how he was very articulate and forthcoming with questions from his fans. And that's how I met Carol, was through the website. And just like Carol's timing was very fortuitous, not only in terms of her accessing Stephen when no one else had ever approached him about doing a book, but also in terms of the development process of Wicked. She was very fortunate to get in at the very early stages of its development. And likewise, when I first encountered Carol, she was just at the point, after working on the book for 4 years, of looking for editors to help her put this all together. And it came out that I had some very particular qualifications that kind of made me uniquely qualified. And we just kind of connected and started working on the book about 4.5 years ago. I think we met in like January of 04.
One of the things I didn't know when writing a book is how much courage it would take to keep going, and also to interview the kinds of people I was able to interview, such as the producers for Wicked and director and some of the stars and so on. And it really helped to have Eric as a friend and moral support along the way. That was one of his main roles, I think.
Tell me, why Stephen Schwartz? I mean, what was it about him that prompted you, Carol, to want to get Stephen?
Besides that he was articulate about his creativity, he has, of course, written scores that so many people love, and I thought that there would be an audience of people who wanted to know some of the behind-the-scenes stories.
Well,
so that's
those,
what I was always asking.
For those and listeners who may not automatically associate some of the shows that he's written, Godspell and Pippin, and he did the Disney movies Pocahontas, The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
He wrote lyrics for those.
Lyrics for those. He's done so much, but I mean, just Godspell and Pippin alone are so well known and so beloved that right there, the fact that no one thought to do a book about him before Carol is amazing to me.
It is. I mean, yeah. I'm sitting here. That question just keeps going through my mind. How nobody else got to him before you, Carol.
Well, I think the people who normally write books about theater people are often the critics, and he's not actually that popular with critics. He's more popular with the masses.
Very true.
Think about Wicked in New York. The critics didn't particularly like it. Outside New York, they did. And a few of the New York ones did, but that kind of person who writes the books hadn't thought that he would be a good topic.
Well, I can imagine that putting together a project like this, very, very challenging. What can you think of what was the most challenging aspect of putting a book like this together?
For one thing, of course, was getting time with Stephen. He's so busy. There were times when he was working on Wicked where I brought my tape recorder into New York City when he had meetings, and I'd walk with him between meetings and on subway rides catching some of his up-to-date comments. And so that was one thing, and then knowing what to say. Also, one of the main things I learned from him, I was creatively blocked for a while because I kept sort of second-guessing and anticipating what people would want to hear from the book, and that's a creative block that writers can have. He was showing me with Wicked, they weren't trying to please an audience, although it turned out that certainly they did. They had a particular concept and show that they wanted to communicate, and they just tried to make it the best that they felt it could be. And they wanted to please their own sensibilities. And so I learned that from Stephen. And as soon as I started to try to really please myself, it started to flow more easily, and it got better.
What about any fun moments putting this together, the most fun moment you can think of?
Oh, well, I think meeting Stephen Schwartz for the first time was pretty exciting, and going to his office and holding one, he has one of the Oscars there, so he let me pull it out of the glass cabinet, and they're very heavy. They're about 8.5 pounds, so that was kind of fun.
That is very cool.
I need to interject.
Yes, sir.
That this is in the book. Carol recounts that moment, and that she pointed out that it's flaked at some on the base of it, I believe.
The Oscar statuette. Yeah.
Carol said, can't that be repaired? And Stephen said he didn't want it to be repaired because it showed the veneer of the whole Hollywood.
Oh, how interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, well, Eric, as far as editing the book, what do you see as the most challenging part of the process?
I'd have to say that's stymieing me a bit. The most challenging, obviously, is following through. Trying to, no matter how many times you read the same material, trying to keep an objectivity as if you're reading it for the first time. Mm-hmm. I functioned as both a developmental editor and copy editor. And how many times Carol had to ask me, she said, you know, don't read it as an editor, read it as a reader. You know, and sometimes that could be very challenging to try and be as objective as if you were coming to the material for the first time. Mm-hmm. But you asked Carol what was the most fun. And
well, that was what I was going to ask you. Did you get to hold an Oscar along the way?
No, but I did get to meet Stephen, and I got to see Wicked a number of times. But the most exciting was indeed when I was flown up to New York to meet Carol and Stephen, and I first saw Wicked on Broadway. That was a thrill and a half, an absolute thrill and a half. But to me, the single most fun thing, first of all, it was working with this material and with Carol. It was a sheer pleasure from start to finish. How rare it is for an editor to indeed work with material that they find so endlessly interesting. And he is. He is a most fascinating, extraordinary individual.
Well, you know, this whole concept that, again, nobody got to this before you guys. I haven't read the book, I'll say that up front, but I'm looking forward to it. Now, but I do know that for Wicked, as far as that's concerned, there's a coffee table book called The Grimmery. And, you know, it's filled with all kinds of Wicked-related history and the information, facts, and trivia. What makes the Wicked section of this book, Defying Gravity, different?
In Defying Gravity, I created a chronological narrative that covers Wicked's development from the conception of the show, which was actually Stephen Schwartz's idea in 1996, through the opening in 2003 on Broadway. And I'm including comments from the producers and Winnie Holzman, Joe Mantello, not just as quotes, isolated quotes by topic, but in a narrative, so you're supposed to feel like you're reading a novel. And people do tell me that it's exciting to read. I try to put in much narrative tension there. That it's nonfiction, so it's all true, but there's a way of structuring it so that you feel like you're really reading a story, and that's kind of fun.
If I could interject, The Grimmery is a fun book. It's more of I don't mean this derogatorily at all, but it's like a glorified souvenir book, wonderfully produced and with lots of facts and fun facts and figures and history and all that, but kind of designed for the upside of the whole process of creating the show. This really shows the nitty-gritty behind the scenes, nuts and bolts, what it really took to put this show together. And I have to say, there are always two books that are mentioned whenever anybody references a good source of the making of a Broadway musical. And they are Craig Zaden's Sondheim and Company and the book called The Season by, I believe it was, William Goldman. I really, really believe that this section on Wicked will be right up there with one of the most indispensable documents of the creation of a major Broadway musical. It's a fascinating glimpse behind the curtain, just fascinating.
Mm.
Thank you. Well, I think one thing that helped was that I had direct access to Stephen Schwartz, and he liked exploring the creative aspects, so he was willing to share a lot of things with me that he might not have otherwise. And I include some of his handwritten music. I include some of his kind of scratch notes where he worked on ideas for a song. For example, he showed me some of his notebooks that we reproduced for Defying Gravity. There's some unrhymed phrases of what he wrote out first for the ideas. And then on the next page, you turn the page and then you see the completed lyrics with all the rhymes. So it's kind of, it gives that kind of insight that he shared with me, and I pass that along to the reader.
Talk about timing. I just can't imagine the timing on this, to be able to catch it at such a time when Wicked was just coming together. I mean, it's really fascinating.
Yes, it meant that I could go to San Francisco, which was the pre-Broadway trial, and I interviewed Stephen out there. And then I also spoke to him over the summer between the San Francisco show and when they were trying to get it ready for Broadway. And they really went through a lot of difficult, stormy times over that summer. And I
Big time.
Got that right onto my tape recorder. And then everyone has been through the book. It is an authorized biography, so Stephen's a career biography. Stephen's been through it, and also the Wicked producers, and they allowed me to put all kinds of things in I wasn't sure they were going to allow, but they wanted the full story there, so it's been Defying Gravity.
Defying Gravity, and what a title. I mean, of course, you never know what a book's going to end up like as far as title or things like that when you're starting off, but
right.
I'm sure Defying Gravity is the perfect title for this book about the creative career of Stephen Schwartz. Perfect title.
Thank you. Yes, it took me a while to get there, but it does seem to represent, he really identifies himself in many ways with Elphaba, the heroine of Wicked, the musical. And Defying Gravity is her truth moment where she transforms her view and is able to make a stand for her own integrity. And many times, even had a moment of truth where he had to, you know, follow what his inner calling was and check back in with that, even though it was very clear to him from the very beginning. From age nine, he decided to write for Broadway musicals. His first shows were successful, and then he went through three shows that flopped, and he had to really kind of check in with himself and say, what am I going to do? How am I going to continue with this? And he was able to find the inner resources to carry on in spite of the failures and come back with Wicked.
I want to get a little bit of background on you guys as far as, you know, what were you doing before this book took over your lives for the last 4 years or so. Carol, tell me a little bit about your background, what you've done, and where you come from, that sort of thing.
I'm from Madison, Wisconsin. My husband and I were living in Iowa at the time, and when I started this project, I had a writing degree. I'm a former librarian, and we sort of actually lived near where Marion, the librarian, where Meredith Wilson wrote the
Music Man.
The Music Man. So I think of myself as a former Marion. But I wanted to be on the creative side of the publishing world. So I was inspired by a book called The Artist's Way in order to, that helped me claim that I was a writer. And it's scary to write something on spec, but I decided to go ahead and do this. And then at that time, my husband lost his job in a technology downturn, so we decided, well, we really have to be on the East Coast for me to finish this project. So we moved, we're relatively near to where Stephen Schwartz and his wife live in Connecticut, which allows me to get together with him at Starbucks.
How convenient.
Time. That was helpful.
And Eric, what's your background?
I live here actually in Fort Lauderdale, and I'm a piano bar player, in fact, at a restaurant and lounge called Magnum's in North Miami.
I know what it
79th
well.
Street. Give that a plug.
You're there on Sunday nights, Magnum's.
Sunday nights, 7 to 11, yes, indeed. It's now on hiatus. It will reopen November 2nd, I believe, or somewhere around there, first week in November. And I'm also a freelance editor. I have been for a number of years, and I have a background in music and obviously and being a piano bar player. So it all just really came together with this particular book, and very happily, definitely a highlight of the last several years.
One of the other things that my husband and I do is create websites. So we created our own Schwartz-related website called MusicalSchwartz.com, and we're able to keep up with Stephen on post news. And I have a newsletter called The Schwartz Scene and a little blog called theschwartzscene.com/blog. One of the things that I list there is Stephen's concerts. He's actually going to come down with his group called Stephen Schwartz and Friends. He'll be in Florida at the end of February, beginning of March.
I know he'll be in Naples on February 25th. Oh. I'm planning
He's
to be there.
He's going to be in Naples and then Panama City and then in Sarasota. Not exactly where you are, but somewhere near.
But it's not too far, especially
Naples
is just right over
Alligator
Alley.
Yeah.
Okay.
You heard of Alligator Alley, Carol?
No, I haven't.
It's quite a treat. You have to come down here and visit us in South Florida.
Oh, well, you should come up. We've got our close to peak fall season here in New England, so it's beautiful.
Yes, I'm a native of Boston, so
I'm a native New Yorker. Look at us.
Well, everybody from the Northeast comes down to Florida at one point, and then they don't leave. So.
Yeah, I see.
And I wanted to ask about that website you mentioned. Of course, you can get information on the book at that website as well.
The book's official website is DefyingGravityTheBook.com.
DefyingGravityTheBook.com, okay.
Yeah. And then the musical, musicalschwartz.com is my site where I keep up with Schwartz.
And I know, I'm sure it's available on the Amazons and places like that as well.
It is, various online places, and it's at the bookstores. This month, Barnes & Noble is having, has a whole Wicked display in all their stores. So
Oh,
right,
so
this month is the 5th anniversary of Wicked on Broadway.
Oh, right, and they're going to release a soundtrack.
A special edition, yeah.
Yeah. I'm so excited. I'm getting a little mixed up here. I want to make sure we cover everything. Of course, I'm going to edit this part out, but I want to make sure we cover everything. Was there
talk about the downturn, Eric? Do you want to talk about...
Well, there was one thing I did want to mention in terms of the book itself. First of all, I think it's a terrific read about a very exciting subject. People really should read it. It's good reading. And people have asked me, like, what is my favorite thing in the book? And I do have one really favorite thing, and that is this remarkable picture that is of the moment that Stephen first heard of the book Wicked. And the moment he was on a pleasure trip in Hawaii with some friends, and they were on a boat, a chartered boat. And this friend turned to him and said, I'm reading this really interesting book called Wicked. And he said, what is it about? And she's telling him. And one of the other friends said, smiled for the camera and took a picture literally at the moment that Stephen went, this is the greatest idea for a musical I've ever heard.
If there was a sound effect, it'd be like a boing or a light bulb or something.
Literally. And to me, it's the equivalent. If we had a picture of Thomas Edison when he first thought of the light bulb, what an incredible moment that would be. And this is, I'm not equating Wicked exactly
what
to
page
the light
is that,
bulb.
What page is that picture on? I want to look it up right
it's
now.
It's like 286, is that right?
I'm going to look
it
up.
Rings the bell? But I think that that's just a great picture, and it's very emblematic.
277.
Okay, it was off by 9 pages. It's very emblematic of this book.
I think Stephen Schwartz's favorite aspect of the book is the creativity.
Speak about that, Carol, the creativity notes.
I think Stephen's favorite part of the book are the creativity notes that I've included. There's over 20 of them, where I decided that I should really distill his comments about the different aspects of creativity and how he writes his songs and how he gets over some of the creative blocks and how other people can too. So he really gives tips, and I wanted to share that with people. A lot of the chapters include those.
And Stephen's response to the book, I'm sure he's very pleased with it.
It took a while for us to get there, but by this draft, he is. And it was nice because to have him reading some of the drafts, and then he'd say, well, I can tell you don't know enough about this particular transition in my life. For example, at the point where he'd had several flops in a row, he had decided to go back to school and train as a psychotherapist. He wasn't going to continue on as a songwriter at all.
Amazing.
And so he had to explain that to me a little more fully, and then I could put that in the book. And at that point, Disney started to call, and Howard Ashman had passed away of AIDS, and they needed another lyricist for Alan Menken to work with. Mm. So he was able to start on Pocahontas, and that retrieved him as a songwriter.
Turned everything around, yeah.
And it's a good thing it did. I mean, can you imagine if we lost such a genius in the musical world? I mean, maybe there wouldn't be a Wicked. I mean,
Very possibly.
It's hard to imagine Broadway without Wicked today, isn't it?
What a phenomenal success it is, yes.
One of the things I like to talk about Stephen's approach to Wicked as compared to Gregory Maguire's approach. Gregory Maguire.
Well, I should interject that Gregory. Right. I'm sorry.
Gregory Maguire wrote the brilliant novel called Wicked, The Life and Times of the Wicked Witch of the West. And that's what Stephen Schwartz heard about when he first thought of making Wicked a musical. And then he read it. But Gregory's intention was not exactly to create a precise prequel to The Wizard of Oz. He wanted to do a whole retelling, and he created this amazing, immense fantasy world that is a whole elaboration of Oz. And Stephen, on the other hand, he really loved the idea of a prequel. So if I could read this from my book, he's commenting about how he had in mind some of the experiences that an audience member for a show like Annie would have. So the musical Annie tells about Little Orphan Annie, but it's sort of the prequel of her becoming the girl that
the icon that we all think of
in the cartoon. And at one point in the show, you see her coming down the stairs, and Stephen says he was fond of the pleasurable jolt one gets when one finally sees Annie coming down the stairs in her signature red dress and curly orange hair. And he wanted to create moments like that in Wicked. So he says, not just the creation of the Wicked Witch persona, but the Scarecrow, Tin Man, Ruby Slippers, Flying Monkeys, all the Oz icons. I felt the show had to deliver on all of that, and it would make it really fun. So that was really his intention, and that helped structure the show and make it as delightful as it is.
Yeah. Mm. This has really been a pleasure. Before we go, any last words about why somebody would really enjoy this book and reading it in the creative process?
Well, let me go first. I just got a call from she's my practical mother. She's 94 years old. She just called me yesterday. She got the book. And she has known me literally my whole life. And I've always been involved with theater and music and everything, but she said she had no idea that any of this went on into what goes into the making of a Broadway show. She had no idea. So, and she was thrilled with this. She said she was reading this like a novel.
Mm.
And that to me is just one of the greatest compliments, because this will appeal not only to just people who already have an active interest in theater or Stephen Schwartz or Wicked, but even if you have no prior conception,
it is.
It's, and I think I really mean this sincerely. Carol has done an extraordinary job of distilling this mountainous amount of material that she culled over the years into such a cogent, fun, fact-filled, page-turning delight of a book. It's just, it's wonderful.
Carol, do you agree that you did such a great job?
Oh, well, very much, with the help of many friends, including Eric and quite a number of other readers who gave me feedback. But I also find that when you, let's say you appreciate a song, like the friendship song in Wicked called For Good, then when you go and you read about where the idea came from and how it emerged from Stephen Schwartz, it just enriches your experience of hearing the song. That's what I find. For example, I tell the story of how Stephen interviewed his daughter to get some of the ideas, and she made comments about her lifelong friendship, and that helped generate the ideas for Good. And he also got some feedback from his wife about some of his lyrics, and there's a little funny story about that that I include. So then when you hear the song the next time, it's a richer experience.
It is.
Well, this has been quite an experience, a very rich experience, I might say, having you both on South Florida Arts Beat. I want to thank you very much for taking the time that you did to talk to us about your book, Defying Gravity, The Creative Career of Stephen Schwartz, From Godspell to Wicked. That's quite a long title. Defying Gravity.
Well, it says it all.
Defying Gravity for short. But Carol DeGere.
DeGere.
Let me say it again. Carol DeGere and Eric Brown, thank you again for being on South Florida Arts Beat.
Well, thank you so much for having us, Paul.
It was a pleasure, Paul. Thank you.